Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Thank you for joining the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston. Every once in a while on the Empowerment Zone, we have icons and legends on our show. And today is one of those days. I am absolutely thrilled, delighted, elated that we have Miss Alexis Scott as our guest today. She is a journalist and publisher, and she was born and raised here in Atlanta, Georgia. Miss Scott's grandfather was W.A. Scott II, who was founder of the Atlanta Daily World, which was one of our nation's first Black-owned daily newspapers. She has had a 22-year history working at the Atlanta Journal and Cox, Atlanta Journal and Constitution and Cox Enterprises, where she worked as a reporter and moved her way up to Vice President of Community Affairs and then Director of Diversity at Cox. She became involved in the inner workings of Atlanta Daily World, and she has been a featured commentator on The Georgia Game, a weekend review program in politics, which was broadcasted on Fox 5 in Atlanta. She's been a board member of several organizations, and in 2003, she was appointed by Mayor Shirley Franklin to the board of the Atlanta Workforce Development Agency. Ms. Scott has received numerous honors and awards, and she has also served as president of the Atlanta Press Club. Welcome, Ms. Scott. I am absolutely thrilled to have you as a guest on the Empowerment Zone.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Glad to see the work that you're doing to help the community.
Thank you. And so today, as you know, I am an American historian. So, of course, I'm passionate about history. And I just want us to explore some Atlanta history. And if you could tell us all about the founding of the Atlanta Daily World, the history of the Scott family in Atlanta. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about leadership in Atlanta and why we're able to produce such distinguished leaders in all aspects of society, politics and government, business, great educators, many leaders within the nonprofit community, ministers, many of them come out of Atlanta or currently live in Atlanta. And I just want to explore some local history with you today.
All right. I look forward to it. You start off with the Atlanta World?
Yes. Yes, please do.
Okay. It was started by my grandfather, as you noted, William A. Scott II, in 1928 as a weekly publication. Hmm. He started at the behest of a businessman in Atlanta who suggested he do this. His original plan was to produce business directories around the South so that Black people could connect with businesses that they needed. He had done two already. He did one in Jacksonville, Florida. He did one in Atlanta. And he was from there. But the Citizens Trust Bank was the first Black bank in Atlanta, Black-owned, 1921 it started. And the banker suggested that my grandfather start a newspaper in Atlanta. And he offered him the printing press, which had belonged to a life insurance company that went under. Foreclosed. And so he bought a $500 loan. He started the paper in 1928 as a weekly. It took off quite successfully. However, he wanted to do more with it. He published twice a week and then three times a week. And then he decided he wanted to make it a daily. So he wanted to make it a daily with a trained journalist. So he drove to Chicago. And Chicago was where the Chicago Defender had been started in 1905. Also, the Associated Negro Press was headquartered there, and this was a news service for all Black newspapers in America at the time. And so he went up there, an editor who had experience. Also, they had tried to start it in Chicago, too, sometime back, but they couldn't maintain it because they didn't have the business sense to do it. In any case, he found Frank Marshall Davis, who had been part of the Associated Negro Press and was currently at a newspaper in Gary. I believe it was a Gary Crusader. So he convinced him to come south. He studied journalism at Kansas State University, and he was from Kansas, so he had never been south, and he didn't really want to come. But my grandfather convinced him to come, offering him $25 a week. He was making $15 at Gary, and he, with another offer of another $10 if things went well. So it was going to be $35. Is that a week or a month? I can't remember now. Probably, it might have been a week. So this was a big sum of money that he got. So he came down to Atlanta in 1931, early January. And I know this because I read his biography called Living the Blues. His name is Frank Marshall Davis. And he became rather famous later on. He started poetry while I was in Atlanta. And he came, and in March 1932 was when the paper went daily. And Frank carried it as the editor of the paper. And my grandfather, they apparently got along very well. He was really pleased with the paper and pleased with Frank, and Frank was pleased with my grandfather. So things went along really well to the point where they had a first Black publication to have ABC circulation of 23,000 papers back in 1934. Mm. And the same, I guess the same day of that big headline was the day that my grandfather was killed. And he was shot in the back, his front door, as he was coming home one night. That was in February of 1934. And he lived for a week, but he died. And it was a tragic death, but there was no witness and no gun. So that nobody knew who did it. It still remains unsolved. However, people do think that it was, his name was Maddox. He was the brother of my grandfather's fourth wife. Mm-hmm. So it's a big scandal in that people said that he did it because they thought my grandfather was a bigamist. He had other wives prior to this last Agnes Maddox. He also had two children by his first wife, who was my grandmother, Lucille Scott. She grew up with him in Mississippi. That's where they grew up. And she was the childhood sweetheart's first wife and the mother of his only two children. And my grandfather, apparently, he was a preacher too. So he was... I guess he decided he needed to marry. Every time he fell in love, he married, got divorced, and got married. I don't know. But anyway, it didn't work out in the end. My father was 10 years old, 11 years old when his father, he just turned 11 when his father was killed. And so Frank stayed at the paper for about another year. Then he left and went back to Chicago because everybody was so heartbroken and devastated. And my grandfather's, one of his younger brothers, my grandfather was one of nine children. He was the second oldest. And the youngest brother, C.A. Scott, took over from him. C.A. was 26 years old when he took over. And I succeeded C.A. Scott 61 years later. But anyway, he took over. Frank left, went back to Chicago. I've got a little sidebar for you on Frank Davis, Frank Marshall Davis. He joined a writer's club in Chicago when he went back with his poetry. In the writer's club, Richard Wright, Gwendolyn Brooks, Frank Yerby, and other people, lesser known people, that became known as part of the Harlem Renaissance, like some Blues. Mm. And one of the writers was a young white woman who was 18 years his junior. and he took up with her. They got married and stayed in Chicago through World War II. Finally, she said, we need to leave Chicago because it's so racist, so much racism in America. Let's go somewhere where everybody's colored and everybody gets along as well. So she convinced him to go to Hawaii. So they moved to Honolulu, and he continued to work and write there. And later on, he befriended this white World War II veteran who had liberated one of the concentration camps, who had a black grandson. And he became kind of a mentor figure for the black grandson because his grandson had been abandoned by his father. Mm-hmm. And that young man went on to be president of the United States.
Isn't that something? Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
It was amazing. I was like, what? How does this connect, you know? And so I didn't find that out until I was at the beach reading a book about Obama's run for president. It's called The Renegade by Richard Wolff, I think is his name, who wrote. Renegade was his Secret Service name for Obama. Obama was this. And so in that book, there's a reference to Frank Marshall Davis, who had been with the Atlanta Daily World, who knew him when he was up. And I said, Frank Marshall Davis, I don't think there was a reference to Atlanta Daily World, but maybe it was. But I came home and I went in our, the paper's been microfilmed and digitized through ProQuest.com. And I started looking through the files, and there it was, that Frank Marshall Davis had been the editor that my grandfather had hired to convert the paper from a weekly to a daily. And I was just so amazed. I couldn't believe it. And then I went and looked in Obama's autobiography, and he references Frank. He doesn't talk a lot. He just says that his grandfather used to go by there and visit him. And he said he was old, and they'd have drinks and stuff and write dirty limericks. And I realized later, too, that part of the reason he did that was because if you go to the internet now and search, you'll see that it says he was a communist and he was Obama's real father. Hmm. There's some crazy stuff that's out there. So anyway, that was a sidebar. I didn't mean to get off on.
But that's a great sidebar to discuss.
Discover how close, you know, we are all connected.
Yes.
And you never know, you know, one out of some tragedy comes something else amazing.
Yes.
So in any case, the paper continued and went on. And as I said, 60 years later, I went to the paper in response to my cousin's call for help. Portia was his daughter, Portia Scott. Mm-hmm. And she said that she needed some help. Her parents were getting elderly, quite elderly. And her mother had just died, I think, maybe she just died that year. She went blind, too, and all kinds of problems. Her mother had sort of done the bookkeeping part of the business, and her father, you know, ran all the rest of the operations. And he was getting so old and wasn't able to come down to the office anymore, so he was doing everything through her. And she really needed some help because she only worked on the news side, worked on the business side. Mm-hmm. Because of my experiences at the AJC, when I became VP Community Affairs, I became a part of the executive committee there, and we met every week with the circulation, advertising, business, operations, newsroom, and me, and circulation. That's awesome. So I knew exactly what to do from 30,000 feet, right? And so I decided that if I didn't respond to the call for help, that it would not be all right if people went out of business and I hadn't tried to do anything about it. So I put in my resignation. By this time, I was out at Cox Enterprises, which is the corporate office that owns the Journal and Constitution, as well as other media companies in town. And I put in my resignation. I was trying to retire. I was still in my 40s then. And I left and took over the paper, 1997. Initially, I thought the Portia and I would do it together, but we couldn't work together because she was still too afraid to challenge her dad. And so I said, okay, he came running from home and he doesn't know what to do anyway. He's too old and he's out of touch. The paper did not have any computers, have any voicemail. We didn't have anything. needed no internet access. And I knew it had not raised advertising in 10 years because she showed me a proposal to raise the advertising rates that my father had been, he had been dead for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And in the memo, he said, we raise the rates in 5 years. So I said, come on, we got to raise it. And I was like, really raising like double, triple rate. I said, we'll grandfather in the people who are already advertising. Some of people like Richard, a couple of others. I said, but the rest of them, it's the rate, it's what it is. They don't know that it was four times less than this. So we just weren't able to get along. And one way we kind of finally worked it out, we went out to there's a family enterprise center at Kennesaw State. And we went out there, they had a seminar, they do regular seminars. So we went out there together, she and I. And at the end of that day, we both realized we couldn't do it together. So that was very useful, very helpful. And we had a board meeting, family shareholders meeting, because my grandfather was killed without a will. Everybody had a little piece of ownership, all of his surviving brothers and sisters, as well as his mother. But CA had sort of amassed most of the ownership. So he was the second largest shareholder. At the time, my mother was the largest single shareholder. So we had a big meeting, and we had both Portia and I went into the meeting to take control, and both of us had two separate boards that we were trying to get elected. One, they were all the same except for one position, my brother and her nephew. And when we got to take the vote, CA voted for my brother because he couldn't vote against his own brother, who was the founder. My brother had the same name. My brother's William A. Scott the fourth. And so CA voted for him, and Portia was fit to be tied because she said, no, Daddy, you don't want to do that. He said, yes, I don't care. So he voted for me. So my board won. So that put me in charge. Hmm. And it resolved that way. It was really kind of amazing. But that was in 1997. And by 2000, we were back making money, and more money than we were spending, I should say. But still, we need to spend more. One of the miracles, there were several miracles that happened along the way. When I got there, we didn't have internet, but we called the phone company to get voicemail put in. And when they came to talk to us, they said, well, what are your other telecommunications needs? That we need internet, we need computers, we need everything. And they said, well, we can do that for you. We can do it all on lease. And I was like, what? So we didn't have to have any money out of pocket. We just had to pay the monthly lease note. So that was great. So we got everything that we needed. We had 10 computers and, access to the internet and also voicemail. But no, we were trying to do business. And it was a very exciting time. And then I said, okay, we've got to redesign this. And I'm sitting at my desk trying to figure out how we're going to do that. Called some of my friends at the AJC. They all wanted tons of money to do a side job, you know. So I answered the phone one day, and it was a kid, a student who had just graduated from Southern University. And he had worked internship at Essence Magazine, also the Dallas Morning News and other publications. And I said, okay, I need a designer to help me redesign the paper. He said, I can do it. Come on down here. I said, I can't pay you much, but come on down. And so he came and he helped. Together we redesigned the paper because it had kind of been a patchwork of fonts and headers and different kinds of things. So we came up with a theme for how we're going to do sections and different, you know, aspects of the news. And we got a new logo for the first time. First, I was afraid to get a new logo because the only one that I had ever seen was the one that was currently there when I arrived. But it turns out it was like the third or fourth one anyway. Mm. But that made me feel better about changing it yet again. So we changed it. And it was great. So we went along really well for a time. And then by the time, I guess in 2008, the tornado took the roof of our building, the first tornado to come through the city of Atlanta.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was devastating. Plus, it was also the timing was bad because all the advertisers were going to the internet for advertising social media instead of being, we lost a lot of advertising that way. And one of the things that we did do, though, in 1999 was we did launch a website to be one of the first Black publications in Atlanta to do it. And but it still required marketing to get people to know it was there. What used to see in newspapers online. We also published twice a week by the time I got there. So we did that probably too long too, because just couldn't generate enough advertising really for two weeks, because the universe wasn't, you know, either your daily or your weekly. That was about what they used to. Mm-hmm. So it didn't eliminate that publication until after 2003. We went to once a week. And still was too late, though, to do anything to get any more advertising. But we kept trying, kept working at it. And then, what did I say, the tornado, changes in the industry, advertising. And one other thing, what was it? I can't remember now what it was, but it was just not a good time for us. So we're trying to figure out what to do. And one of the things that happened, another fortuitous thing that I always say, you know, you could say it's serendipity or it's luck or whatever you want to call it. A group was trying to rebid for contracts at the Atlanta airport. And they wanted to do a newsstand. So they wanted to call it Atlanta Daily World Newsstand. So they came to see me. And I said, yeah, I'd love to do it if it don't cost me money. I can't afford to pay for it. You know, it'd be great marketing for us. And they said, no, we'll pay you. I said, oh, okay, that's even better. So they paid for licensing. We got a 1% or something like that. And it turned out to be a really good deal. It was the first time we ever made money while we slept. And we opened three newsstands. Or they opened three newsstands. We didn't own them, but they had our name on them. In Concourse B, C, and D. The biggest one is on Concourse C. And that was a lifeline, but not enough. The other thing that happened during that time is we digitized the newspapers. A company, ProQuest, when it had a section called Historic Newspapers. So they added us to the list with Chicago, Atlanta, and I think a paper in Los Angeles Central, something like that. So, can you hear me all right?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, my husband is calling. Let me see if I can you hold it for a moment?
Yes. Okay. So, what after, the people used your name in the airport for the newsstands, then what happened to the newspaper following that?
Wait a minute. Let me.
So, Ms. Scott, where does the newspaper stand now? What are you all doing now?
Well, now the paper belongs to someone else. We sold the paper in 2012, despite the newsstands, which were great. And the microfilm we got some money back from having people subscribe to ProQuest. They gave us a percentage too. Mm-hmm. But it just wasn't enough. It was too little, too late. And we just couldn't do it by ourselves anymore. So I started looking around for somebody to join and found this group called Real Times Media. They had made a commitment to save some Black publications. In fact, they bought the papers from a group that bought them from John Singstack after he died. Mm-hmm. So the company is called Real Times Media. They bought the Chicago Defender, the Pittsburgh Courier, the Michigan Chronicle, and the Memphis Tri-State Defender, and then the Atlanta Daily World. And we joined them in 2012, and they saved the paper. And
we're still owned by them. And I left in 2014, and wasn't my paper anymore. A friend of mine was recruited to open the Civil Rights Museum here in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and she asked me to come help her, so I did. I was vice president of membership and helped them set that up. It's kind of like circulation, mm-hmm. so I was able to do that pretty easily, and then helped them do some additional fundraising as well. So we got it open in 2014, and I left after the end of that year. They did some reorganization because they didn't have, they couldn't afford to keep us on staff. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So when we look at the Atlanta Daily World, what do you want people to know in terms of its legacy? What do you feel like the legacy of your family and the Atlanta Daily World were?
Well, I think one of the things that it did was it was like the Black CNN of its day, because it was only daily. You could find out what was going on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So it's like the cable news networks now, where you got information in a timely manner. And that had a serious impact on decisions that people made. Also, I think it reflected the education, the importance of education in the Black community, because they covered the events in the Atlanta University Center schools on a regular basis and had all kinds of information. And my great uncle, who became a Republican all the way through Nixon, and who else followed him? Bush. Mm-hmm. And he was a Republican largely because in the South, the Democrats were Dixiecrats. You know, they were all the racist people who wanted to support segregation. So most Blacks, including Martin Luther King Jr.'s father, were Republican because of the race being the most important thing and being able to break down those barriers. So I think one of the things that they did do with the Atlanta Daily World was to break down those barriers with the news coverage of all the court cases that went on constantly to get equal pay for teachers, to get rid of the, what was that vote called? I can't remember. It was a Supreme Court decision in 1944 that only said it was all white Democratic Party primary. So you could only have white people voting in the primary.
Correct.
And so that
white versus all right.
White versus white.
I think all right.
Oh, I don't remember the name. Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. But in any case, that was significant in terms of coverage. And then the was it Hamilton Homes and the golf courses made. It took them 5 years before the Georgia Supreme Court finally ruled unconstitutional to have segregated public courses. And that, of course, led to the opening of the rest of the parks and recreation and stuff, where we were paying taxes and not being able to participate. The other thing, and all these were big headlines, and of course the Brown decision was the kickoff of the modern civil rights movement. And we had, when that decision, the very next day after the decision, the headline was two lines above the masthead, above the fold, you know. Mm-hmm. And I used to compare that when I was at the Journal Constitution, when I became an executive, when the new general manager was hired from the law firm for the paper, he called me in his office. He said he wanted to decorate his office with some historic front pages. And when he pulled the Brown case, he said, "I can't put this up because the headline said, 'Dark Day in Georgia.' Doesn't mean us," Talmadge said. It's crazy. And you could see the hosannas on our front page, you know, Supreme Court rules school segregation unconstitutional. And so it was this extreme difference. And I think that's the legacy, and the continuing difference now is a matter of perspective. You just have you see the same facts and same experiences, but you have a different perspective on it because of your position in society. And as in the Black community, we're still sort of on the outside trying to get in. I think that's been made even more stark
Yeah.
Over this past year with the pandemic and the current president that we have had. I mean, you can see, you know, we saw somebody get killed on live TV, an unarmed black person get killed by a white policeman. And it's just something that people are just beginning to see. And with the pandemic, you're seeing the disparities in healthcare because we're dying disproportionately more and that kind of thing. And people are beginning to really see that and realize that there are some adjustments and some things that need to be done.
Yes, so perspective is so important, and that's what Atlanta Daily World did and still does, is giving the Black perspective, like you said, looking at the same facts, but interpreting it in different ways. And then when you look at, like you said, some of the leadership having the ear of national leadership, and just being able to promote education in the Black community. I mean, the Atlanta University Center is the center of Black education when you look at historically Black colleges and universities.
That's right. And when I was growing up in segregated Atlanta, many of my doctors, my teachers had terminal degrees, doctorates from places like University of Chicago, University of California, Berkeley, Columbia University, et cetera, all these different things and places that were just all because of segregation. We were not allowed to attend graduate school in the state. And so the state actually paid for these people to get these amazing degrees from Harvard, from Columbia, and et cetera. And these were my teachers when I was in high school, getting ready. So it just, it's amazing what there was a kind of a double-edged sword to segregation. In some ways it was good because it brought the community together. In other ways it was bad, of course, because we weren't allowed to participate fully.
Yeah.
But I do think we still have that kind of thing going on to some degree. Maybe it's not as direct. It's more subtle now. But there's still a lot of things that need to be addressed, need to be fixed.
Of course. Well, we really appreciate you coming today and telling us all about the history of Atlanta Daily World. And I know you have a wealth of information about the history of Atlanta. So maybe you can come join us again and give that oral history. You know, I come from a family of great, great aunts who lived to be in their 90s.
Wow.
Who we know the history of our family because they lived to tell the history, and we recorded that history. And it's, and as you know, the griot is important to our community in that we preserve our history orally. And I just want to make sure that we also record it so that future generations can know about the history of Atlanta.
Wonderful. I'd be glad to come back anytime. Apologize for being tardy today and my technical difficulties and all that.
No problem.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for coming. Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.